All right, so in these days leading up to Pesach, we still have to learn Chumash every day, but there's no Parshas Shavua. I figured we would learn a few of the pastoral letters that Rabbi used to send out in advance of Pesach, speaking about Pesach, and highlighting important messages of the Yom Tov. So this letter is dated Yud Aleph Nissan, and the year was the equivalent of 1958, Tav Shin Chai. The Rebbe's pastoral letters would be addressed Elachenu b'nei Yisrael b'chol asar v'asar. Later on, he would write b'chol makim shehem, in every place. My son pointed out to me that time and space are linked. So if it's applicable in every space, then it must also be applicable in every time. It's reasonable. Shalom u'bracha. Peace and blessing. This letter was originally written in Yiddish, and it's been freely translated into Hebrew. And I'll read it in its Hebrew text. You have the copies in front of you, and I'll try to translate and explain. So this letter highlights the idea that kol yom tov, that every yom tov brings with it a teichne hamiyuchad shaloi. That's the nature. Every yom tov has its own unique message, its own unique flavor, its own unique, you could say, content. Now, the truth is, every Yom Tov has a common content, namely, Hashem wants us to be close to Him, and He wants us to interrupt what we're doing on a regular basis, and we should observe a different code of conduct. And the truth is, that is applicable to every Yom Tov. Hilchos Yom Tov is not unique to Pesach, to Shavuos, or to Sukkot, for that matter, Rosh Hashanah. Hilchos Yom Tov, Hilchos Yom Tov. The things you're allowed to cook and things you're not allowed to cook. The things you're allowed to do and things you're not allowed to do. The rest, the cessation that's required. You come to Beit HaKnesset, you listen to the Torah being read, you add in your prayers. Yom Tov is Yom Tov. The Yom Tov Shmon Esrei is one size fits all. It just gets tailored with little inserts in between. So really, Yom Tov has an overriding message. But Yom Tov also has a specific content. And that's why in the one size fits all Shmon Esrei, there's a special mention of Pesach, of Shavuot, and of Sukkot. And it also comes along with a description that this is Zman, this is a season of. So the Rebbe says it's not only a content which is relevant for those few days, but Limudei Vahira Oisav Hamiyuchadis, each one with its content that comes along with special lessons, special guidance, special instruction, which are Noigim, which are relevant, L'chol Eila Shachag Nitolahem. If the Yom Tov was given to you, then the details of this Yom Tov are relevant for you. Who was the Yom Tov given to? To Bnei Yisrael. If the Yom Tov is given to Bnei Yisrael, then it's relevant for Bnei Yisrael. That is to say, we have an obligation and a responsibility towards all of humankind. That's not a small statement. It's a very, very big deal. The Rambam says it's part of our spiritual persona. We were given the responsibility. In fact, we were given the obligation, Lokof es kol bay olam, to try to influence all the peoples that walk the face of the earth. The entire human family is supposed to be influenced in a positive way. They should all be keeping Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Ne'er, and that's our job to promulgate that message. Nonetheless, despite the fact that God consciousness is relevant for every human being, despite the fact that it's our job to be the teachers of morality and of decency, and to try to get people to focus on things like decency and compassion, like compromise, and kindness, like charity and like chastity. We have to work on all these things, that's true. However, there isn't a special message on Pesach for a non-Jew. The non-Jew doesn't speak to him. That's the thing. The Moyadim, the Yomim Tovim were given to Yisrael. That was given to us specifically. And as such, the message of whatever the Yom Tov, the content of the Yom Tov, is going to be relevant to whoever the Yom Tov was given. Hainu, that is to say, for who? L'chol echad mi Yisrael. For every one of us. So you could say, well, it's relevant for the Jewish people. You know, there's this big proverbial Jewish people. It's relevant for the Jewish people. The Rebbe says that would be a mistake. Because this is, if it's relevant for the Jewish people, it's relevant betur yachid, v'heim betur chelik miklal Yisrael. It's relevant to you as an individual, because you are part of that people. And if there's no individual to whom it's specifically relevant, it can't be relevant to Jewish people either. You meet people sometimes, they don't want to put on film, they don't want to keep kosher, they don't want to keep Shabbos, they don't want to learn Torah, but they believe in Judaism. So what does that mean, you believe in Judaism? They believe the Jewish people have to live, the Jewish people have to survive. There has to be a Jewish people, but somehow it doesn't talk to them individually. That's a big mistake. You missed the point. If it's relevant for the Jewish people, if it's important there should be a Jewish people, then there has to be a Jewish person. Then it has to be relevant for us. It talks to us as an individual. So that's as we are as individuals in our own personal and special unique relationship with Hashem, and as we take place in the grander or bigger scheme of things as a member of the nation of Israel, as a member of Klal Yisrael. And then, of course, it's relevant for our nation as a conglomerate, as one whole. L'Klal Yisrael b'tur klal. All right, so now that we've laid that foundation, that Pesach and its Yom Tov and its messages have to be relevant for us on multiple levels. The Musay HaMiyuchedes Shekol Chag, if you want to know what the unique personae, the unique markings of personality of every Yom Tov is, so then oftentimes you'll find that it's mishtakafas umizbatas b'shmoy shel esei chag. You'll see that the name of the Yom Tov will invariably bring you its message. So you want to know what does this Yom Tov want from us, or what does this Yom Tov bring to us? How does it enrich our lives? Simple. Look at the name. The name will tell you the story. Or look at the mitzvahs. Look at the observances that we're commanded to do in honor of this Yom Tov. They will have a message.
Rabbi, yeah. There's a question preceding the response in this letter. Like, is it relevant to what we're learning today, or
is what was the question?
Yeah. What is the Rebbe addressing today?
He's addressing a big question. And the big question is, this whole business of Pesach, what does it have to do with Nathan Choron's life?
That was the question.
Does it have anything to do with Nathan Choron? Is it something that he has to do come Friday night, but it doesn't really change his life, it doesn't really mean anything to him? Or Pesach has a message for you, and your life is supposed to be different after Pesach than it was before Pesach because of the way you observed and celebrated Pesach. So the Rebbe is helping open your eyes so you should understand and appreciate a central theme and motif of Pesach, so that you'll be able to utilize this opportunity in the fullest sense. So it's not per se like you're used to. Usually we have the talks to the Rebbe. There's a question and an answer. This is less question and answer. The Rebbe's pastoral letters usually are without questions and answers. It's kind of like statements. He's sharing light. He's giving us direction. Okay. Pesach comes along. He's providing insight. Here's how you should look at Pesach. Here's how you should be able to personalize it. That's the big question is not a scholarly question. The big question is a practical question. What does all this have to do with me? How does it talk to me? Achad ha'inyanim. Which, by the way, just to finish off the previous paragraph, this also is not only the mitzvahs, but also the dinim and the minhagim, also the rules, the laws that govern the observance of the holiday, even the customs that are associated with it. They all tell a story. They all tell a tale. They all bring a message with them. Echad ha'inyanim ha'ikrim. One of the primary and overriding messages of Pesach is Shebechag ha'Pesach is nirmez gam b'shem shekavu anshei Knesset Hagdela. There was a name which, to the best of our knowledge, does not show up until the Second Temple era. Where do we find this name? Not in the Torah. We find this name in the Siddur. We find this name in the liturgy of prayer. As I mentioned before, we have a Shmon Esrei. It's got one size fits all. And it has the special inserts. The place where you, now, on this Yom Tov, you say these words. Same is true of Kiddush. Kiddush is a general formula. But then on a specific Yom Tov, you're supposed to say these words. And Anshei Knesset HaGdela coined that phraseology in a very precise and exact way. And what they used, the term they used to describe this season, the time, is Zman Chedoseinu, the time of our freedom, the time of our liberty. V'hatoira nikras teiras chayim. So the Torah is called a Torah of life. What does it mean, a Torah of life? On a very literal level, it means it's a moiras derech b'chaim. It guides us in life. And so if this is a part of Torah, and Torah is what guides us, it gives us direction for life, dereshes mikol Yehudi v'Yehudi, so then it's asked of every single Jew to lizker, to remember, and not just to remember as some kind of distant past, but rather, Hainu, Lichyes Michodosh, Esachedos, Yitzias Mitzrayim, Kol Yem V'Yem. That we should not only remember that once upon a time was a people who went free. Zman Cheiruseinu means that the idea and ideals of freedom are applicable now, today. We're supposed to relive that which happened then. That was the season of their liberation. There was a time when our ancestors were liberated, but our sages coined it as Zman Chayr Seinu, the time of our freedom. So that we have to, so to speak, live this. And this is K'maymer Chazal, like the saying of our sages, which this is a Gemara in Maseches Pesachim that speaks about, the Mishnah actually, that speaks about how we should behave at the Seder. But ultimately, we understand it to be a message for life, of how a Jew should live his life. The Mishnah says, B'chol der v'der, and the Alter Rebbe interprets that Mishnah by adding in three words, U'b'chol yoyim v'yoyim, in every generation, which means every day. Because when it says in every generation, what does it mean? Once in my lifetime? Once in a generation, every 25 years? What does it mean? So it means, chol der v'der means it's relevant in every time. If it's relevant in every time, so when should it be relevant? Then it has to be relevant. So for a yid, kol yeme v'yeme over davidite, every day is a new opportunity to serve Hashem. Comes the end of the day, we go to sleep, and wake up in the morning, chadashim l'abkarim, we start all over again. So whatever we did yesterday was great. Now we have to reinvest ourselves in trying to make this day meaningful. So if there's this idea that a yid is supposed to, in a continuous and ongoing manner, experience yitziyam imitzayim, then if it's b'chol der v'der, then it has to be b'chol yim v'yim. Chayev adam lidus has atzmei, a person has to see himself ki'ilu hu yatzam imitzayim. In other words, that there is a tzivui, that there is a command in the Torah, that there is a drisha, that there is a request, a demand that's made of us. It's a commandment and a demand that Hashem makes. L'chol der v'der, in every generation. That means, when we say every generation, it doesn't mean unique or specific generations, generations where this came easily or not. That means generations when Malchus Beis David Hoisek Hayemes, generations when we had the full leadership that we could possibly hope for, generations where David HaMelech or his progeny was leading our nation, or times when there was a Beis HaMikdash, which these are the brightest of times. In the second Beis HaMikdash, we had a Beis HaMikdash, we didn't have Malchus Beis David, but still we had a Beis HaMikdash. We were living our lives in accordance with the way Hashem said, or at least we had the opportunity to, if we wanted to. And then there is Yemei Hashmai HaFeila, the days of darkness, the darkest of days for our nation, which is Yemei Hashmad, a generation where the members of the generation, the Jewish people, are under duress to collapse, cave in, and to give away the Judaism, to stop the observance of Yiddishkeit. And there have been many, many such generations. Whether you talk about the generation that experienced the Holocaust, whether you talk about the generation of Jews who live behind the Iron Curtain, and entire generations for whom Yiddishkeit required unbelievable sacrifices. And there was a force that was arrayed against us with the singular focus of destroying Yiddishkeit, of making sure we didn't exist anymore, of making sure we were assimilated and forgot who we were. And we were doing so under the pain of death and under the threat of torture and suffering. Should you do the right thing, should you live your life as a Jew, you will suffer for it. Which is the darkest of times. So when it says b'chol der v'der, it doesn't say this in a qualified way. It says in some generations, when you have time on your hands, when you're not trying to stay alive, then you should see yourself kilu yatzim imitzayim. That would say maybe not b'chol der v'der. It says der v'der. It would say der v'der. But it says b'chol. B'chol is inclusive, all inclusive, in every time. That means regardless of our circumstances, we have a responsibility to live freely. We have a responsibility to taste and experience the concept of freedom, of liberty, which is a big question. If you looked for a question, there's your question. How does a person who's living under servitude or exile or slavery, how does a person like that experience freedom? What does that mean? How did they have a Seder in Auschwitz? By the way, they did. How did they? What were they talking about? There's kol Yehudi v'Yehudi, every single Jew, b'chol yom v'yom, every single day. Afki esmel avra alav yetzias mitzayim, even though if he's an observant Jew, if he's a Yid who takes Yiddishkeit seriously, and the Alter Rebbe says to him that this business of going out of Mitzayim is b'chol yom v'yom, so he says, I went out of Mitzayim yesterday. I had my mitzorim, I had my limitations, I was going to lose my cool, flip my lid, I control myself, okay, I'm tired. That was yesterday. Today, give me a day off. I don't want to go out of Mitzayim today. Today I want to sit back and live very comfortable in my Meitzarim Mugvulim. This is what I do. This is what I don't do. Don't give me a hard time today. Today, leave me alone. I want a day off. Is there such a thing in Yiddishkeit? There's no days off. Now, why did Hashem give you this day? So in every single day, Afki Esmel Avralov Yitzias Mitzrayim, maybe yesterday went through a significant paradigm shift, a big Yitzias Mitzrayim, Chayev Ulekayim Yitzias Mitzrayim Echadash. Well, a new day has risen, a new day has broken, get back to work. Now you have to experience another Yitzias Mitzrayim. Umachashuv. And don't expect to go on vacation after today. Tomorrow, should HaKadosh Baruch Hu help, and you're here, then all over again. Go out of Mitzrayim again. Work on this again. Why? Ki teichen yetzias Mitzrayim, because the content, the deeper message of yetzias Mitzrayim is hishtacharus mimitzorim u'gvulim. Going out of Mitzrayim is not a question of moving geography. It's not a question of a particular set of circumstances that we were once faced with in a specific or particular time as we were a nation about to be born. Rather, going out of Mitzrayim means that Mitzrayim is a euphemism for the concept of Meitzorim Ugvulim. It's even a permutation of it. Meitzorim. A Meitzar is a border, a stricture. A Meitzar. A straight, a narrow straight. That's a Meitzar. There are many names of places that paraphrase the concept of straits. Whether it's the Straits of Gibraltar, or Detroit, which is French for Détroit, which means narrow straits. There are many forms of geography that are described by narrow straits, be it the passage of water through a narrow strait, or sometimes between mountains. It's a narrow strait. Why Mitzrayim was originally called narrow straits, I don't know. Maybe it was the Straits of Tehran that gave the whole country its name. But what's what it was called? Mitzrayim. And Mitzrayim's message is, the idea of Mitzrayim is Mitzarim, narrow straits, and Gvulim, and borders, strictures. What do these strictures mean for us? So these strictures mean, Ha'oimdem l'satan bedarkei. These are the things that narrow our pathways. They get in our way. The satan does not have red skin, a tail, horns, and carry a pitchfork. What do we say, the devil? For Jewish people, the satan means, l'satan lo means to impede progress, to get in your way. The most famous example is when the evil prophet Bilam was heading out to curse the Jewish people, a malach came. He wasn't a devil. He wasn't a bad malach. He was a good malach. Do you know what he wanted? He wanted to save Bilam's life. That's what he wanted, because Bilam in the end, he self-destructs. So what was he doing? He was standing on the road, l'satan lo, to satanize him. So satanize you, who knows what that means, right? He had a pitchfork, his tail was out. He was it was no pitchfork, it was a sword. In the metaphor that the donkey sees, the point was that this force of goodness for Bilam wanted to help Bilam save him from himself. So he kind of created obstructions on the road. And that Bilam's horse, or donkey, pardon me, would have to like go in a narrow place and eventually wouldn't be able to get through. And this would force Bilam to stop. And then Bilam starts to beat his donkey and doesn't see the donkey, does see. The point is, l'satan bedarke means to get in your way, to impede the way. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us resistance in simple terminology. And that resistance is Mitzrayim. The resistance we encounter doesn't always mean resistance from an outside force. Sometimes the resistance is ourselves. Sometimes we're our own worst enemy. We create all the resistance. We're resisting our own neshama. We're resisting our own desire to do what's right. So that's our Mitzrayim then. Ve'eina manichem lei, this zatan that comes to confound the way or get in the way, it doesn't allow liyes mashu tzarech liyes, that he doesn't allow you to be what you're supposed to be. V'lasas mashu chayev lasas. Doesn't allow you to fulfill what you're supposed to fulfill. And the satan, incidentally, has many, many outfits. He has more disguises than a Purim masquerade. I think there's a famous Hayyim Yayim that the Rebbe Marash told the Rebbe Rashab that a Yetzirah could sometimes wear a Hasidic garb also. You wear any garb. There's a famous story with the Nachum of Chernobyler that somebody once came to see him and he wanted his prayers and his blessings and he left him an enormous amount of money. Big bag of gold. And then he left. And the next person that came to see him was a poor widow who had to marry off her child and didn't have any money. And the money that she needed was exactly the amount of money he just got. So his first impulse was, perfect, that's why Hashem gave me this money. Take the bag of gold and give it to this lady. Mazel tov, go make a wedding. And as soon as he was about to do that, suddenly a thought came to him. He said, why should you spend all your money on one cause? You should diversify. Multiple causes. You'll do a little bit of Hanasas Kala. You do a little bit of take care of some other things. And by the way, you're not doing so great yourself. Your bank account's empty too. Your children are also important. And he had this question. What was the right thing to do? He didn't have anybody to ask him. Nachum Shlomo, he was the rabbi. Who should they ask? So he asked himself the question, when did that second thought, when did that thought come? And he said, only after the first thought. And from this he understood it was the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara saw such Mesiras Nefesh, a person who could use the money, gets a bag of gold. And what's his first thought? Take the whole bag of gold and give it away. Just like that. The whole thing, just give it away. He said, such an act of Mesiras Nefesh, the Yetzer Hara couldn't stand. So, but he knows that Nachum Chernobyl is going to come to Reb Nachum and say, Reb Nachum, stop being so generous. It's about time you go to Aruba for a week. Enough already. You could afford the vacation. Reb Nachum would never listen. Reb Nachum's Yetzer Hara couldn't speak that language because Reb Nachum didn't speak that language. But the language he did speak was, oh, no, you could help other people. You could do many kindnesses. Now we're talking. The Rambam says, Hakel Fidei Hamaisa, give tzedakah many times. You make a whole lumdisha argument for this the right thing to do. But he said to him, when did that impulse come? That came second. It came second. It must be the Yetzer Hara. The point was, that impulse was a satan. It came to get in his way. He had the opportunity to perform an extraordinary mitzvah. The satan arrived. Who is the satan? His own Yetzer Hara. His own evil inclination. That was the satan. So when we say we have to go out of Mitzrayim, we have to get past our narrow straits, meaning the resistance, and the resistance to become who we're supposed to become and do what we're supposed to do. L'chein, therefore, le'day le'bi'atzias Mitzrayim me'esmel. It's not enough to go out of Mitzrayim yesterday. L'ma'amadu matzavei hayom. It doesn't work for today. Yatzias Mitzrayim hayom le'day le'machar. The Mitzrayim of today does not work for yesterday. Now it seems, when the Rebbe penned this letter, there was an uproar about this. And many people asked, every day? Every day I have to go out of it? Literally? Come on. Like, so the Rebbe spoke about it on the last day of Pesach of the Fibrengen. And the Rebbe later wrote another letter. And he said that there's a simple example in the material world. He said, it's actually printed in the back of the Sefer. He said that mitzvahs, as a rule, are called levushim. They're called garments. How do we know that? Because there's a famous teaching of our sages in the Medrash that says, after Adam and Chava ate from the tree of knowledge, Vayedu ki arumim hein, they knew they were naked. So what do our sages say about that nakedness? It says, mitzvah achas hoysolahem, they had one mitzvah, v'nisartalu mimenu, they emptied themselves of it. So that's the idea of naked. Rebbe doesn't bring it here, but elsewhere, it's brought down, Rebbe Masya ben Chorosh taught, that why do we get the bris milah and the korban Pesach? Because we were naked of mitzvahs. Also uses that language. So we needed something to be able to get out of Mitzrayim with. So the Rebbe said, okay, we know that a mashal, the metaphor of Torah, is precise. There's no general metaphors. And therefore, he said, the Rebbe says, by clothing, you see something interesting. That a person could have had clothing, which fit him very well. As the famous words of Rabbi Yechanan, that kari lemana lemechabdusa, he called his clothes a source of honor. And you wear nice clothes, you look nice. And then what happens? And then the child grows. And the clothes that looked really nice yesterday now look ridiculous because they don't fit. So unfitting clothes do not look good on a person. It could be beautiful clothes. If they don't fit you, if too small on you, too large on you, you look ridiculous. So the Rebbe said, let me understand something. You're talking here about a bolt of cloth. You're talking here about another 3 centimeters of wool. And the few centimeters of wool that are missing, why? The person changed? No. He got another few pounds of plasma, bone and fat and skin. So because another few pounds of plasma, the same exact person, no real change in the person, no intrinsic change, a superficial change, just a little more body mass, and just a little more wool, and all the difference is made. And everybody understands that the suit that you wore yesterday doesn't work for today. The Rebbe says a mitzvah is a transformative experience. It's not same old. When a yid serves Hashem properly, he's transformed on a daily basis. So if you're transformed on a daily basis, the next day, what do you need? You need new clothing. Bigger clothing. More appropriate clothing. Never said it's self-understood self-understood that you have to do this on a daily basis. Self-understood. Otherwise, days don't mean anything. And mitzvahs don't mean anything. And yiddish doesn't mean anything. And he went on to developing this metaphor. Anyway, so what does this all mean now? So how do we understand this concept of freedom then? To be free of our yetzahara, to be free of our narrow straits, to be free of the things that inhibit us. Now listen to this. The Rebbe gives us, he notes and gives us a metaphor, a beautiful metaphor for the concept of what it means for a yid to be free. If you take a look at Bedagos Ha'ilum Asher Sivaseinu, the various levels of reality that Hashem created around us. Now, in Torah literature, the reality around us is spoken of living things. I'm not talking about the inanimate, which doesn't seem to be alive, but in living things, there's Tzemeach, there's the vegetative world, there's the world of Chai, the animal world, which can be from a small little creature to a rhinoceros, but they're all animals. They live, they can be killed and die. And then finally, the human being, and then the Ben Ubas Yisrael, which is a unique class amongst humanity. So the Rebbe says, let's begin by talking about the concept of vegetation. You give him all of his needs. What is his needs? The plant doesn't want to die. The plant wants to live. Do you know that they actually recorded a change in, I don't know what you would call it, plant emotion, in electrons of the plant before it's about to be cut? That indicates the scientists have been able to identify some kind of consciousness, some kind of an awareness around the plant, and what would be interpreted as fear when it knows its life is about to end. So for all those vegetarians who don't want to eat animals, no. Peppers are murdered too. They don't scream, there's no blood, but they may well be aware they're about to be killed. So what does the pepper need? What does the tomato need? In order for it to be, so to speak, happy, fulfilled, to be free, it needs adama, it needs soil, good soil. It needs mayim, it needs water, hydration. And it needs avir, it needs good atmosphere. It's got atmosphere, it's got soil, it's got water. He's the happiest tomato in town. He's meshuchrer. He's a free vegetation, a free vegetable. He has no problems. Everything is great. He's meshuchrer mikol daiga. This pepper worries not. It's a very happy pepper. Has no afra. Nothing's bothering it. Did you ever see a pepper get up and go to another field to see what it's like on the other side of the grass is greener somewhere else? Never happened yet. Only dead peppers move. And then they can't move by themselves. They have no wings, they have no legs, they have no hands, they can't go anywhere. And it's the creed. It was the creed on the pepper. He must remain tethered to the ground for the rest of his life. Until somebody cuts him or he dies, he's never going to move to another place. Does he have any problems with that? Afal pikin called Daniel Tzemeach, as long as he can grow, he's a free pepper. Nobody got in his way. It's a machaya. Now let's go from your salad onto the barbecue. Ulam hachai, af sheyeshle kol tzrachav b'achila. You give this animal piles of food. All the food you want is around him. He has shtia, he has got what to drink, but he's rooted in the ground. He's rooted in the ground. He doesn't have to move. The poor animal is planted, he got cement sneakers, he can't budge. He's stuck in the ground, you planted him in the ground. He has all the food and water, he's got air, everything else is there. So how happy do you think that animal is going to be? I can assure you, extremely unhappy. Why? He needs mobility. Animals need to frolic and run around. The animal's going crazy. So therefore, this would be a maser, a shvi chamor. This would be a terrible incarceration. It was missing what he needs. He needs freedom. Now let's talk about a person. So if a person, put him in a jungle, give him food, give him good food, and say, here's where you are. You can run around. I'll put you in a jungle. It's a square mile. Spend the rest of your life running around. But you're naked. You're nobody to talk to. And you have no kind of intelligent life. You can talk to the monkeys, you can talk to the orangutans, you can talk to the peppers, whoever you want to talk to. They have no interaction, no social life. How well would a person do like that? He will go insane, he'll go meshuggah. Why? Because he needs to have some kind of intelligent discourse. People need a relationship. People need to harness their minds. It's not enough for him to exist. So what was a perfect utopia for the animal is a horrible jail for the person. What did they do to Napoleon? They sent him off to some distant island, and he had ducks to talk to. And he was not happy. They say he would yell at the ducks and scream at them and give them orders. They didn't care. He died a broken man. Right? Here he was, this brilliant person, a strategist, a warrior, an emperor. And they didn't want to kill him, so they sent him to an island. He could never leave the island. He was stuck. The most unhappy of people. So a person understands that in order for a person to reach the highest levels of human development, of personal development, so if you limit his intelligence, then he's not going to be happy at all. And this is the case. We continue to grow like this. And for a person who would not have that ability, that would be the biggest kind of incarceration. As I mentioned yesterday, we'll revisit Patrick Henry. Give me liberty. You give me death, he said. Well, I can't live like this. I can't live a life when I'm shackled. I can't express myself. I'm not allowed to speak. I'm not allowed to do anything. I'm allowed to eat and drink. That's what I'm allowed to do. Open your mouth, we blow your brains out. Are you kidding? It's not a life. So everybody understands that going through life that way would be robbed of freedom. And so the Rebbe finishes off and he says, Le'ehudim, for every single one of us, we have something that nobody else has. We have what's called an nefesh elikis. We have a unique and special godly soul. This chelik elikam al mamash, this actual piece of God, which is embodied into a nefesh abamis and a guf, is connected to Hashem in a special way. And there's only one way for that yid to experience freedom. You know what? It means Torah mitzvahs. That's the only way to set the soul free. And therefore, she'ifasa, what does it look for? It looks for cheiros amitis, looks for real freedom. Li'etzias Mitzrayim, it looks always to transcend its limitations. And there's no end to that, how much a person can transcend. You can go higher, higher, and yet higher. This neshama, by its definition, can't stay in one place. Every single day, there's an aliyah nesefes and teira mitzvahs, which brings it closer to the infinite, which you can never reach, but that doesn't matter. You keep getting closer and closer. He feels deep, deep, deep in the core of his being that the daga of Esmael, that's already Mitzrayim for today. He did that. That's old. I did that already. Now he wants to move. Now he wants to transcend that, leave that behind, and come yet even higher. And this, my friends, is the chedus we're talking about. So there's a beautiful story told that a Mendel Futifas was sent into the gulag, and there he languished and suffered, and terribly, for almost 2 decades. And there was many other people there, not Jewish people. There were playwrights and journalists. There were doctors and lawyers. Stalin murdered millions of people. Sent them off to the gulag. If you survived, you survived. If you didn't, well, that's what was supposed to happen anyway. And they were all depressed. And one night they were sitting there and everybody was talking about the beautiful life he once led and the misery he's in now. And Mendel didn't complain. So they said to him, you must have had a really miserable life, sir, because everybody's so unhappy. You're not complaining. The Mendel said, look, me, life didn't really change that much. It didn't change, really? How bad were things? He says, don't get me wrong. I have a wife, he says. I have children. I had a business. He says, what do you mean it didn't change? He says, I used to spend my whole time trying to serve Hashem. And now I spend my trying to serve Hashem. He says, that's it. It's just the variables changed. It's different. Hashem has different expectations of me. But really, the essence of my life indeed did not change. That's the freedom nobody can take away from us. This is what the Maharal of Prague said, that from the time we went free, we have become intrinsically free, and that nobody can take away from us. We are capable, and in fact, expected to live a life of spiritual freedom. And that is the message of Pesach and Zman Chedusim.